Time now for an update from the crude life,
the most trusted voice in energy.
Jake Milne, Revival Energy.
All right, let's head over to the Zoom line where we have Mr. Jake Milne with us. Reviable Energy, that's with a V, Reviable Energy. Jake Milne, of course, a long veteran in the industrial world, one of those industrial integrity fellows. So, Jake, how are you doing today?
Doing well. How about yourself, Jason?
Well, not too bad. Reviable Energy. Talk to me about that name. I understand it's got a little bit of a messaging and a motto and a creed behind it, huh?
Yes, sir. So it stands for Real Viable Energy. You know, all of us guys that got together to put this company into the operations, we all come from oil and gas and nuclear, coal, all that stuff. And we decided we wanted to get into wind energy to keep wind turbine blades from going in the landfill. But we also said, you know, we don't want to abandon oil and gas, coal, nuclear. We still want to be able to be involved in those because it's our passion, energy. And so it took us a while. That's the name we came up with, it, so that we can cover all energy. And that's our message, is that we want all energy. We want to have everyone work together and get rid of the hypocrisy of left versus right, clean versus traditional. You know, carbon fuel runs the world, and you wouldn't have green energy without it. That's been talked about on this program many a times, and you and I have talked about it back when I was with WIC.
One of the reasons I appreciate our discussions is because you kind of can step outside of the box. You can step outside of what I call almost a tribal mentality, you know, an all for one, one for all type of a leadership the industry seemed to have at times. And now, you know, trying to branch out into all the energies, how's that going for you? Are you able to connect with the traditional oil and gas leadership? Are you able to connect with the renewable energy leadership because you have such a deep history in oil and gas? Talk to me about how you're navigating these very particular waters.
Well, you know, we've got great relationships in oil and gas and, you know, traditional carbon fuels because we've all been in it for so long. Environmental is a big part of what we've done. Bo Brown, he's the vice president, CEO. He's been doing water reclamation and land reclamation since the 90s. I've been doing asbestos abatement for a little over 10 years now. And then we've got Paul Probst, who's our COO, and he is concentrated on all the field operations and whatnot. He came from a nuclear background and then moved over into the oil and gas, primarily doing painting, industrial painting, coatings and such, and then lead abatement, so on and so forth. Like I said, we've got those connections in oil and gas, nuclear, traditional energy. And as far as getting into the clean energy side of things, quote unquote, it's challenging, of course, but with our main focus being recycling wind turbine blades and keeping them out of the landfills, that is a main focus. After our landfill here in Casper got filled up with several thousand, which is what inspired us to get into it, Pacific Corp got a lot of bad publicity on that. Now it's pretty well the standard of the industry to have all those blades recycled to the best of our ability. There's other companies doing it, that's for sure. And a lot of people jumping into this new area of expertise. And it's very exciting. We're all collaborating, even with the competition. But as far as getting in with these green energy companies, you'd be amazed at how many oil and gas companies own clean energy. I mean, we're talking Shell, GE, All the way to carbon capture, which is the big thing nowadays. Exxon, they're doing that big project. Hopefully, I believe they've started this year over at the Exxon plant here in Wyoming, down in the I can't remember the name of that plant right now, but over there by Opal, Wyoming, Kemmer, Wyoming. So everyone's getting into it. The change is in the world. It's happening. It's getting pushed, but with agendas. And everyone's just kind of falling in line while others are, you know, fighting to keep these carbon assets and what runs the world. And oil runs the world. And that's just a fact. And so,
well, let's talk for just a second here. Well, I just wanted to mention real quick because, you know, oil does run the world. And what we mean by that, for anybody listening out there, is 95%, and I've even seen some studies as much as 96% of what we use on a daily basis, from our toothpaste to our toothbrush, needs petroleum products. Either it's made out of petroleum products, there's something that was used to power in order to manufacture it or transport it. So when we take a look at, you know, oil and gas powers the world, we know that. But at the same time, the grocery store did take out the farmer. Remember, the farmers used to feed the world. Then they had to go and hire Willie Nelson and Neil Young, and they tried to do all this farm aid stuff because all the teenagers and, you know, I call it the entitled economy. They forgot about the farmers because the grocery store was here. And now we have the light switch that took care of the oil and gas and coal worker. And the crude life, we've been kind of against that and trying to, you know, educate people on that. And, you know, we do the best we can. But in all honesty, what we've been trying to educate people on more than anything is what you mentioned, is the innovation. I truly believe renewables ain't doable without fossil fuelables, and that in order to have a clean, green energy, they need to rely on companies like Exxon. They need to rely on companies like Shell because they've been the leaders in clean energy, because the people who got all the subsidies, they couldn't do it. So, Jake, I look at you as one of these guys from the oil and gas company, from the oil and gas industry. And I can't wait to meet your partners one day, because if they're anything like you, then they've got ethical energy at the core. So here I'm looking at you guys as being a solution to a problem that was created by public-private funding, and they didn't have a solution, so they went and buried them in landfills. Do you see what I mean? I kind of fell off the rail a little bit there. I'm sorry, but I get so passionate about this because we've really wasted a lot of money. And now we've got three guys who were doing just great in the oil and gas industry. Now you guys have to go out and find, you know, go out and hustle your ass off to go get money again. So talk to me about what you guys are bringing to that industry, because quite honestly, I think the oil and gas industry is the leader in the environmental movement.
Oh, absolutely. And you and I've had that conversation half a dozen times over the years working together. And you're exactly right. Everything, your cell phone is not going to be put together. The other day I had mentioned when we were on Talk of the Town with Steve Bakken, there was a great article that came out last week that said, hey, we can go to net zero, but we're going to go back to the 1800s. You better pull up your wagon, because that's the way it's going to go. And you better get a wood fireplace, because that's the way it's going to go. The world, the industrialized world, is focused on carbon fuels because you can't operate anything. You can't make anything. I mean, these wind turbines, their lubricant is vegetable oil. You know how you make vegetable oil? You take the fatty acids out of everything after it's been crushed, and by adding caustic soda. And it's a chemical refining process. Where do chemicals come from? In the hypocrisy. About 3 years ago, we talked about the subsidies that go into the clean energy side. I said, well, what about subsidizing oil and gas? And you're like, no way, we don't want to do that because then they're going to tell us what we can and can't do. Well, yeah, that wasn't thought of. I agree with that right now. However, subsidizing is costing you and I money and everyone listening to this show. And that is also why in 2020, there was three times as much money invested into green energy than there was traditional carbon fuels. Do you think that would have happened without the subsidized and the promise of the IRA coming out? And now all those jobs were supposed to start this year, but they're getting pushed out. You know, I don't want to shoot at the industry for pushing them out. I think that the best way, the most cost-effective way, an efficient way is proper planning. And hopefully that's what it's all centered around. But it's quite hypocritical. And that's what we're trying to do is get rid of that. And, you know, we're reaching out to our senators and representatives. We went to D.C. a year and a half ago, got with Senator Lummis of Wyoming. We've been with all of our state representatives, and they're all backing us up on this. And I love what North Dakota's done. They were one of the first to make it illegal to put wind turbine blades in the landfill. That kind of forced the hand of these energy companies to stand back and say, well, oh, shit, what are we going to do about this problem? Because now everyone knows it's a problem.
So here's one of the things that I truly believe that the oil and gas industry can bring to the renewable industry. And I believe the coal industry can be a big solution too. And we've been on the record here, at least I have, and since I, you know, own the Crude Life, I guess the Crude Life has too, is the Amish are more advanced than the United States is when it comes to wind energy. And I truly mean that because when you take a look at the cost and the amount of power that goes into creating a wind energy on an Amish farm, they can put up a windmill in like a day, and they get water and power to a barn and maybe even a little bit more. And that's pretty good. And if they're done with it or there's a repair, they can repair it themselves or they can tear it down probably in a weekend. We don't have a reclamation program in the oil, as far as I understand, we don't really have a reclamation program with these wind turbines. And a lot of the farmers are stuck with the bill of trying to figure out how to get rid of that giant wind turbine and the 50 feet of concrete underneath. And some states I know are starting to change that a little bit, but talk to me about the issues with what's going on with wind reclamation and really how the oil and gas and, like I said, coal can educate the wind energy on how to clean up your mess. How's that, Jake?
Well, you know, it was a frickin' mess. In 89, when they started this, they did not... the landowners weren't known of what they were going to be stuck with. And luckily, they've all started figuring that out over the last few years, you know. And in fact, we're working with a handful of farmers in Illinois right now. Their contract is going to be up here in the next couple of years. And those towers are going to be cut down like a tree. And then they got to pay to get it all cleaned up. And yes, they're going to be stuck with that gigantic chunk of concrete out there. For the most part, I believe, and I may be wrong, but those landowners are keeping the concrete there as it is. Well, now you just lost half an acre of farm ground, you know what I mean? Nowadays, though, the average man and woman out there that's having these put on and getting royalties off of them are making sure that's not in the contract. And luckily, they're starting to energy companies are starting to take care of them on that. And so that's changing. As far as reclamation goes, it's an ever-changing thing. And yes, oil and gas has been doing reclamation for years and years and years. And I believe that that's another part of the way these industries can work together. You know, let's learn from the failures of the past and the things that work on this side so that side doesn't have those failures. They're getting better, and they're looking out further ahead. And I hate to say it, the way that regulations are starting to come up with them, it's helping that. You know me, I'm a small government, so small that we don't even see them is what I prefer. But in this matter, I think it's important. They kind of just gave them free reins for about 20 years. And all those issues that were unforeseen back then are starting to pop up, and they got to figure out a way to clean this up. And I agree that there's definitely ways that oil and gas can help out the green energy sector. Something else that is very interesting in that, when it comes to recycling wind turbine blades, there is a few companies out there that use a reactor to break down these materials. You get clean fiberglass or clean carbon fiber on the rear end. You know what else you get? You take all those resins and collect them. You know what that is? That's a partially refined carbon fuel. There's in fact one in Tennessee that runs their entire reactor off of that fuel. And they could, if they wanted, turn around and sell that to an oil refinery as a partially refined fuel. So again, where are these sectors mend and mesh that's overlooked and unknown by the normal person.
Jake Milne's our guest, Reviable Energy. We're talking about some wind turbines. We're talking about reclamation. We're talking about transitional energy as well, because Reviable Energy, with a V, really it's three industry veterans that got swept up in the sea change that's happening. A couple years ago, if you go to thecrudelife.com, you can listen to Mike Rentfrau, who 29 years in the oil and gas business. In 1 year, he went from 100% oil and gas contracts to 20%, 80% wind. 20% oil and gas were decommissioning pipelines that he had built in the previous years. Tara Norris Rasmussen, she was a land woman for a number of years, and she's now doing publishing in Greeley, Colorado. She's the publisher of the Greeley Lifestyle magazine, which gives her an opportunity to showcase some of the stories on oil and gas. Jake, I look at, you know, the three of you guys and your background in industry. What are the three of you bringing to either the oil and gas industry or the green industry or just the industry overall? Talk to me about you and your skills and what your company can solve that are, you know, the solutions out there, the problems that are out there, that type of thing. I gave two other examples of people that kind of had to, I call it changing the oil while driving 90 miles down the interstate, because that's really what we're talking about here, is that so many different people have had to reinvent themselves, reinvent their companies, create new distribution sources, new revenue streams, new cost of goods. I mean, basically at the end of the day, you got a whole new product and a whole new service, that type of thing. So talk to me about what your guys' skills are and how you're going to contribute out there in the industry, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, I'd love to. So, you know, I hate to start with myself, but I will. My main focus right now is reaching out to the public and to our politicians and letting it be known, you know, that there's better ways to do this. Along with Bo, we do a lot of R&D. That's mainly Bo's area. He is a bookworm, and he loves staring at the computer reading all day. So I'm like, yeah, you can have that. Let me know when you find something, then I'll dive in. Now, it's what are we bringing? We're bringing a traditional mindset with an understanding that we're looking towards the future. We're going to jump on the trend and you know, try and make a little bit of money out of it, but also make sure that everyone's held to the same standard of you know, green environmental policies. We are environmental people. We want clean, green energy. We want clean rivers. And I want to be able to go hunt every year and not worry about getting up in the mountains and be covered in smoke, you know, that type of thing. However, we have a lot of experience in cleaning those things up in the oil and gas side. For example, remember the great big spill in North Dakota?
Yeah.
Bo was involved in getting some of that cleaned up. And then
Bo, your business partner?
And a lot of the crude pits, the cutting pits, he was doing a lot of reclamation there. And then that went away. So his business kind of went away. And, you know, they changed the way they were doing things up there. But I guess what I'm saying is that we're trying to make sure that we have a clean environment all the way around. And we're all for clean energy. However, we can't leave the guys that have taken care of us for hundreds of years in the dust and not look back, because we still need them to come up with these clean energy routes and philosophies. And it's an ever-changing market, and it's going to continue to change, you know, especially with these wind turbine blades coming down faster than ever. I want to say it's 7,000 in the next 5 years. Maybe it was 10. So that's an R&D bow question. But those are going to come down because either they've reached end of life on those farms, and or they are coming up with better technology. Those are going to be bigger wind turbine blades. And because they have these bigger wind turbine blades that cost about the same, a little bit more, and they're going to produce more power, it makes more sense to tear those ones down. If you got 100 of the old ones on this farm, well, you know what? We're going to put 50 up, and we're still going to produce more power. It's cheaper for these guys to tear them down and start over than it is to try and run those the life of the farm, because innovation. You know, the world is all about innovation, especially when it comes to these new industries. And it's great because it gives us work and something that we're passionate about. And it's ever-changing. So that's what we bring. We bring that we are oil and gas and carbon fuels, and we're trying to get ahead of an industry that has already made some mistakes. Let's try not to do that. One of those things that we are concentrating on is land reclamation when it comes to these projects. Like I said before, though, our main focus is keeping wind turbine blades out of the landfill, finding a way to make renewable energy real viable energy, real renewable energy. That's where the name came from.
Who's your customer? A lot of people would think it's a landowner. A lot of people would say it's the government. A lot of people would say that, you know, you got to go and take it down and go find a scrap metal person, and that's how you make your money. Who's your customer?
Well, we've got obviously the energy companies, and then there's other companies that have gotten to the recycling side of things. A few of them were using our methods of you know, getting them to a processable size. And a lot of those guys decided, you know what, we're going to get out of the front end side of it, and we're going to concentrate on the actual recycling and repurposing side of it. So we're working with a lot of them. Yes, landowners that are stuck with these, of course. And as far as government goes, that is few and far between. We are working with a local government in Oklahoma that's pretty much been left in the dust and forgotten about. And they're trying to get back on the map. They've partnered with a energy company up there, and they are taking these blades off the wind farm, letting them be stored on their land. And then it's an unknown variable right now that we're working on with them to, you know, we're going to back charge you because we're going to get charged by Reviable Energy to handle and process these blades, get them to the recycler, and then the energy company is going to pay the city. That's going to give them some residual income and, you know, hopefully bring more jobs to the area and start revitalizing that community that was left in the past. So who pays for it? It's the gamut. But does the government per se pay for it? No. There's people getting grants to find ways to take care of these things, and of course grants to build new ones and tear new old ones down. But at the end of the day, it's the energy companies and those others that I mentioned before.
Well, how can people give you business? How people get in touch with you if they want you to come out and do a bid or talk to you about how they can solve this problem with these wind turbines?
Well, you can always go to our website, revivalenergy.com. That is revivalenergy.com, revivalenergy.com, one word. We're on LinkedIn, in Revival Energy, and I can throw out my phone number and my email address. The number is 307-253-8920. 307-253-8920. And my email is Jake, J-A-K-E, dot Milne, M-I-L-N-E, at revivalenergy.com. Jake.Milne at revivalenergy.com.